First, sea levels are going up as a result of climate change. And a new report from the federal government says sea levels could rise an entire foot in the next 30 years. That could mean more and more flooding for communities along the coast, putting infrastructure like sewage systems and ports at risk, as well as houses, businesses, and roadways. We're taking a closer look at the latest data on sea level rise and what action we can take to prevent the worst of it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you concerned about these rising sea levels? Do you worry about an increased risk of flooding because of climate change? Where do you see climate change impacting your life now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Michael Mann is a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at Penn State University. He's the author of the book, The New Climate War, The Fight to Take Back Our Planet. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
We have this new report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration looking at the future of sea level rise. What are we seeing in this report?
Yeah, so the report is sort of communicating, you know, the science that's already known, and that science has been advancing quite a bit over the past several years, but not just the science, what the impacts are, what this is going to mean to us. And in that regard, it's a very important report. Among other things, it tells us, look, first of all, there is inertia in the climate system when it comes to the heating of the oceans and the melting of ice and the rising of sea level. So there's a certain amount of sea level rise that's already locked in. And we're probably looking at another foot of sea level rise by the middle of this century, no matter what we do. So we're going to have to adapt to that. We're going to have to contend with that. We're going to need to increase our resilience in the face of those impacts we can no longer avoid, while doing everything we can to prevent those impacts we still can. A foot is baked in, but whether we reduce carbon emissions dramatically over the next decade or just continue with business as usual, burning of fossil fuels, is going to mean the difference between whether we get a couple foot by the end of this century or we're starting to talk about meters of sea level rise. So our efforts today will have a huge impact down the road, but we have to face the fact that we are going to deal with the impacts of additional sea level rise no matter what we do, and we need the tools and the funding and the organization to make sure we reduce the vulnerability, especially among those who have the least adaptive capacity, the least resources.
People might hear 1 foot, 30 years. That doesn't sound like that much. What does that translate, though, into impact on coastal areas?
Yeah, so here's a fact for you. Sea level rise of just a few inches can lead to the retreat of the coastline by more than 8 feet along some of the sort of coastal regions, for example, in the Mid-Atlantic, North Carolina. So they're seeing retreat of 8 feet a year right now, just because of inches of sea level rise. Imagine what happens with a foot, and then if you can, imagine what happens with 3, 4, 5 feet. And so we're already seeing massive inundation, and it's, you know, not just sea level rise. It's the fact that sea level rise is combining with more intense hurricanes that are driven by warmer oceans. And so you get bigger coastal storm surges along with that sea level rise, and they act together to give us some of these catastrophic coastal flooding events that we've seen in recent years in the Carolinas, in Texas, Louisiana coastline, and increasingly in New England as well. So, you know, just a little bit of sea level rise means a huge amount of coastal damage and threat. And a lot of sea level rise, well, that would be catastrophic.
You mentioned the idea of adaptation. We've already seen sea level rise another foot, likely now in the next 30-ish years. What does adaptation look like? Does it mean moving away from the coast, or can we do things to mitigate and still keep all those people in those places you just mentioned living there?
Yeah, well, you know, that's that last line of retreat, of our defense, which is retreat, managed retreat. And we want to minimize that, right? And so the greater the action we take, the more we slow that down. So if we do have to migrate away from our coastlines, at least we're doing so over many decades rather than over a matter of years. And so once again, action, climate action will buy us time to adapt, to adjust, to these new conditions. But, you know, we're already seeing the impacts in higher insurance costs. It's more and more difficult for you to get your home insured if you're on the Carolina coastline or the Miami, you know, Southern Florida coastline. And so, as I, you know, have argued before, uninsurability is sort of the first step in uninhabitability. If you can't insure your home, then it's not a good investment, and you're forced again to move away. And those with the most resources, those with a lot of money, can do that. They can relocate. They have the resources to do that. Who's really going to be hurt are poor folks, especially this falls along, you know, we see a disproportionate impact on minority populations in flood zones that are going to be stuck with the worst impacts of climate change. And so this becomes not just a climate change problem, but a climate, you know, a justice problem.
Talking to Michael Mann from Penn State University, climate researcher, author of the book, The New Climate War, The Fight to Take Back Our Planet, looking at a new national report on sea level rise, another foot coming in the next 30 years or so because of climate change. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Karen is with us in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hi. I was very disheartened when I heard your question, you know, how does climate change affect us now? Because I thought, it's so obvious. It's been obvious, and we've gone from climate denying to now climate adjusting in a matter of months, weeks, whatever. The quality and the fabric of our life is at risk, and as the young woman whom I cannot remember her name said, I want you to act as if the house is on fire because it is on fire. The manatees in Florida coast, they're dying because there's no seagrass to eat, and the water's polluted, and the barrier reefs are being destroyed, and we have fires in Australia, and there places are becoming deserts, and people are starving, and there's migrating because of loss of the ability to feed or even provide water for families, and there's...
Karen, I'll jump in. Thank you for calling in. And Greta Thunberg, I believe, is who you're referring to there. Michael Mann, Karen is saying the climate change impacts are already here.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've just been talking about sea level rise and the devastating impact that sea level rise is already having on people along the Gulf Coast, along the East Coast of the United States. But, you know, that all of that impacts us, you know, whether we live along the coast or whether you're in the Midwest, whether you're in Wisconsin, where we're seeing this sort of whiplash between more devastating drought and heat in the summer and these Arctic blasts, these so-called polar vortex events, which we think may be related to climate change themselves. And so it doesn't matter where you are today. What the science tells us now is whether you're on the coast, whether you're inland, you know, this is a globally connected world. When a large number of us are hurt, we all hurt. We see, you know, an impact on supply chains, on prices around the world. When one region suffers the consequences of devastating weather events. And so the climate crisis is here. It's not 10 years from now. It's not 20 years from now. It's not 50 years from now, as the caller says. It's here now. We can prevent the worst impacts if we act dramatically, and we need to do that. We need to get off our reliance on fossil fuels. The catastrophe that's playing out in global politics right now, the war in Europe, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, at the center of that is the fossil fuel economy. And so we have to recognize all of these damaging impacts that our reliance on dirty fossil fuels is having, whether it's, you know, the geopolitical problems that we're facing right now or the climate impacts that we're already, the devastating climate impacts we're already dealing with.
Karen, thanks for the call. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, gentlemen. I have two thoughts. I believe that, you know, the worst indeed might be coming. but I think there's two possible solutions. If we reduce our population worldwide significantly, you know, radically, if we reduce the number of people on the planet, and also if we instituted a recycling program, not only nationally, but worldwide, where we reused our resources instead of kept fighting over the limited ones we have left. What do you think?
Jeff, thanks for the call. Michael Mann, population, lower population, more recycling of resources.
Yeah, thanks for the question, or both comments and questions. It is true that the more people there are on Earth using more resources, when we are, you know, living in a carbon-based, you know, dependent world, a carbon energy dependent world, that's going to mean more carbon pollution. That's going to mean more warming, more climate change. That having been said, there are orders of magnitude, 100 or more, factor of 100 or more difference between how much carbon we pollute in the industrial world, in the United States, other industrial regions, and say people in some of the poor locations of the global south, in India, in Africa, where, you know, the carbon footprint is, you know, a factor of 10 or 100 smaller than that of us here in the industrial world. So we have to recognize that, while population comes into it right now, the real problem isn't so much when it comes to climate change, how many people there are on this planet right now, is how many people who are living carbon intensive lifestyles. And we certainly need to do something about that. Now,
I just want to jump in, Michael. Obviously, lowering population, the timescale you're talking about for climate change, lowering population, barring a horrific catastrophe that we don't want, obviously, that's a long-term thought compared to the shorter term of climate change.
That's right. And in the long term, look, we do have to figure out how to live sustainably on this planet. And there's some larger, you know, there's a larger conversation we need to have about how we move away from an expanding extraction-based civilization to a more sustainable one. And it's important for us to continue to have that conversation. But as you allude to, we've got to tackle this problem now. We don't have 10, 20, 30 years. We've got to bring our carbon emissions down by 50% by the end of this decade to avert the worst impacts of climate change, a catastrophic warming of more than 3 degrees Fahrenheit of the planet. And so that requires immediate action to decarbonize our economy. We know what the source of the problem is. It's burning fossil fuels. We have the solution in the form of clean energy. We just need the political will to massively scale up renewable energy, get off the burning of fossil fuels.
We're talking to Michael Mann, director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's with us today to talk about a new federal report showing sea levels could rise by another foot by the year 2050. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing the impact of climate change around you, wherever you live? What does it look like? How is it impacting your life? What questions do you have for our guest about this latest report on sea level rise and the other impacts of climate change? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're talking about climate change and the prospect that sea levels could rise a foot, another foot, over the next 30 years. That's in a new NOAA report. Michael Mann with Penn State University stays with us. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Bill is with us now in Boyceville. Bill, hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Bill?
So I wanted to bring up our diets as far as the impact on the climate, animal-based meat consumption, and the production of meat produces a lot of methane gases, which are...
You're breaking up, Bill, but I think we got your point there. Michael, you mentioned fossil fuel burning, the main cause of climate change emissions. Bill's wondering about the impact of a meat-based diet and agricultural system.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Bill. It's an important one. And yeah, you know, fossil fuels, the burning of fossil fuels for transportation, for electricity generation, that's about 60% of our total carbon emissions, actually closer to 66%, almost two-thirds. And so that's the lion's share of our carbon pollution, but that still leaves, you know, a third. And so we do have to look at all of the sectors of our civilization today, and agriculture and land use is an important part of that. And so, you know, in my book, In the New Climate War, I do warn about sort of shifting attention entirely to individual behavior. Polluters have been trying to do that for decades. They want to make it about our individual carbon footprint so that we're not talking about theirs. 70% of our carbon emissions comes from just 100 polluters. So yes, we should do those things that we can do in our everyday lives that, you know, that reduce our carbon emissions. They make us feel better. They save us money often. They, you know, they make us healthier when we bike, or take other means, walk, to work or school rather than relying on fossil fuel based transportation. There's so many things that we can do to decrease our carbon footprint, and changing our diet is definitely one of them. But we're not going to see the carbon emissions reductions we need without policies, without systemic change. And we need to put pressure on our politicians, on our policymakers, to support those systemic changes that move everybody in the right direction. There should be an incentive. We shouldn't have to shame each other if we choose to eat meat. We should have incentives that actually encourage people to get off meat, to a carbon friendlier diet. And I've done that in my own life. I don't eat meat. I feel good about my choices. I feel better. But I try not to shame others who haven't made that same decision. I try to encourage them by setting a good example.
Thanks for the call, Bill. And Michael, you're touching on the idea that this isn't just a scientific problem. We got the science down pretty much on this, but a political will problem, given the difficulties of getting people to agree within one country to take action, much less among a whole bunch of countries around the world. Do you see this as a surmountable political problem?
Yeah, I do, and I'll tell you why. About 6 years or so ago, we were moving in the right direction. The United States, under the Obama administration, had taken a real leadership role on climate. And that brought other world leaders along, other countries along, even China, that has been somewhat intransigent. They haven't had the luxury of two centuries of access to cheap energy like we have had in the West. They're still trying to grow their economy. And it's cheap to do that with the dirty fossil fuel energy. So we need to make sure that there are incentives for the developing world to not make the same mistake that we in the Western world made for two centuries. And when we did take leadership, we saw China come to the table. They were decommissioning their coal-fired power plants. They were going beyond the commitment that they had made at the Paris Agreement and to the Obama administration. Then, unfortunately, we had an administration that completely went back on our commitments, that unilaterally pulled out of the Paris Accord, the only country in the world to do that. And that said, sent a signal to the rest of the world that we weren't serious. And if the world's largest legacy polluter, we've put more carbon pollution into the atmosphere than any other country, if we're not serious about it, why should they? The good news, the Biden administration is taking a very proactive stance on climate. It is bringing other world leaders along. We are seeing China now come to the table. We're seeing India, a developing country, come to the table. And so there's reason to believe that we're starting to make the progress that we need. We're seeing carbon emissions plateau. That's the good news. They're no longer increasing year after year, in part because we're moving towards renewable energy. We're not doing it fast enough. We need to come down that mountain, halfway down, reduce our carbon emissions by 50% this decade to remain on a path that keeps warming below truly catastrophic levels of 3 degrees Fahrenheit.
Do you see low-hanging fruit? We had one caller talk about a meat-based diet. I've heard talk about, methane leaks. A caller we won't have time for, wondering about focusing on reduced vehicle emissions in the short run. What to you would be actions we would take that would make the biggest difference if we took them now?
Yeah, absolutely. There are individual actions, like we've already said, that we can take to try to minimize our own carbon footprint. Not everybody is going to do that because they care about the environment or they care about the climate. That's why we need those incentives, those market incentives, so that people make the right decisions. They make climate climate-friendly decisions without even thinking about it, because the market mechanisms are pushing them in that direction. We're providing subsidies for renewable energy. We're pricing carbon. We're putting our thumb on the right side of the scale to help save the planet from climate catastrophe. So there are all those things we can do, but also at the systemic level, there are government programs that we need to support that help people transition to renewable energy. Solar, you know, panel tax credits, other programs that encourage people to elect renewable energy and energy efficiency, as the question alludes to. Part of the solution here is being more efficient. That's how California has brought their carbon emissions down while growing their economy over the last decade or so, by both by reducing carbon emissions, by also putting in place efficiency measures that save energy.
In just our last minute, Michael, we're far from coasts here in Wisconsin. In a place like Wisconsin, just briefly, what would be your biggest climate change worry?
Yeah, you know, there's a very important agricultural sector in Wisconsin. I've spent some time there, dairy, crops, corn. All of that is being hurt. It isn't a future problem. It isn't 20 years or 30 years down the road. We're seeing extremely damaging impacts on agriculture in the Midwest already. And so, you know, for a state like Wisconsin, that's going to be deeply problematic. And the more warming we get, the worse those droughts and those heat waves get, the more trouble we have with, you know, in the agricultural sector, in the dairy sector.
Michael, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's Michael Mann, distinguished professor and director of the Earth System Science Center at Penn State University. He's also the author of The New Climate War, The Fight to Take Back Our Planet. With us today to talk about a new federal report that says sea levels are likely to rise another foot in the next 30 years.